So chapter two is where the study group is on in the basic principles of science of mind. And chapter two was on the power of your thoughts. And anyone who's been around science of mind for a while knows that that is the foundation of the philosophy, that we have all kinds of sayings, change your thinking, change your life. And there's so much power in knowing that truly, that if we are aware of what we're thinking, it impacts the experience of our life, and it impacts what we attract into our lives. And I think it's a lot to do with that each thought, if we're getting into like quantum physics, each thought has a frequency, a vibration, and so if we're focusing on challenges or problems or things that we would call negative thoughts, that's a lower frequency, and the higher thoughts, what we call God qualities or spiritual thoughts, would be higher frequencies. They would be focusing on the quality. Oftentimes the challenge is calling forth a divine quality. And so if you can look at any challenge that way, okay, what quality is being called forth? What quality has spirit desired to be expressed as me? If I can get into that space, it definitely shifts the experience. And so that's where we, in science of mind, religious science, go into spiritual mind treatment. We're giving our minds a treatment to shift the focus of our thought to a higher frequency. And from that place manifest more positive experiences. There was a quote somewhere in there that the quality of, so if you're thinking with the quality of God, if you're thinking with the qualities of God in mind, the divine qualities, that will manifest experience much more than what we might call the human thoughts, which are more based on what we see with our senses, what we're perceiving in the physical world that seems like fact. Most of the mainstream would say this, if you see it, if it can be provable, then this is the fact, this is the way it is. And that is the human perspective, and there is truth in it from the human perspective. But from the divine perspective, there's so much greater possibility. There's infinite possibility if we simply shift the way that we perceive it. And so the power of the thought, electricity is used as a good metaphor for this power. And that this, if you think of electricity, that this power has been in the universe forever. Even when before people knew it was here, the power of electricity existed. And so it was at some point, I guess it was Thomas Edison who figured out how to utilize that power. But if you think of the power of our words like the power of electricity, you can use the power of your words and thoughts for positive experiences, or you can, just like you can use electricity to light up your home and make life convenient, or you can use it less consciously if you're being pulled into a lot of what we see in mainstream with the negativity. Just turn on the news and you're there. they don't report enough positive news, in my opinion. But so when we're in that negative space, then that's where we're living. We're living at that lower frequency. And if we're not using electricity consciously, it can electrocute us, cause a fire, or have something not desired happen. So it's a lot about consciously being aware of how you're using your thoughts, and that the power is moving through you. It's coming from the one source that we're all part of. And so for us to use this power to manifest things in our lives, there's a sense of oneness, that we're one with the divine, that we have to embrace the divine quality, the divinity that lives within us. And I know for some people that's a stretch. They don't see themselves that way. So that can be a challenge. But I think there's a poem by Rumi that really describes this idea of the light and what the light is and how we can feel about it. So this is a translation of a Rumi poem by Andrew Harvey. The lamps are different, but the light is the same. So many garnished lamps in the dying grain's lamp show. Forget about them. Concentrate on the essence. Concentrate on the light. In lucid bliss, calmly smoking off its own holy fire, the light streams towards you from all things, all people, all possible permutations of good, evil, thought, passion. The lamps are different, but the light is the same. One matter, one energy, one light. One light mind, endlessly emanating all things. One turning and burning diamond. One. Ground yourself, strip yourself down to blind, loving silence. Stay there until you see you are gazing at the light with its own ageless eyes. So it's stripping down to that bare essence of, what does spirit mean to you? How are you willing to let it flow through you, the essence of it, the energy of it, to tap into that that awareness? And there's so many ways, but when we start from the human perspective, I think we start with words, because that's what we know. We know how to express in words. We know how to describe in words. And so that's where we begin. So I think part of how we get to being willing to move to that higher frequency about words and divine qualities is through trust. That when we trust that there's a bigger picture, and that if we could see the bigger picture, it would all make sense. And so then we can look at the challenge and say, okay, there's something else going on here. I just have to trust there's something else going on here, and that it's serving me, and something good is going to come from this. You know, all of those kind of shifting, we're slowly shifting from the negativity into, okay, there has to be something good in this. You know, just trusting that. And you know, even though we can't see it, even though we're not privy to that information. Also trusting that love is behind everything, even though there's times, you know, when we all suffer, we all feel pain, we all feel discomfort. That's part of the human experience. It's I think it's a matter of how long we stay there is part of where we are on our path. So getting into trust and moving to the higher thought that will shift our experience. Focusing on the quality being called forth. And then looking at, you know, what is your perspective? Is the glass half full? Is the glass half empty? And then finding power in the words I choose. And so, regardless of what's going on, we can say, I choose, and I can choose again, and I can choose again, and always at choice. We're always at choice. So part of moving into a higher frequency, one way to do that is with appreciation. And so finding something to appreciate, turning away from what feels challenging to something that that you appreciate is going to help you move more quickly to a higher frequency. For me, you know, that's always been nature. There's always something in nature that just will light me up. So finding a new thought, and finding a new thought as a spiritual practice is like planting a seed, a new variety of seed that you've never planted before. And anyone that's a gardener knows, you know, if you put the seed in the fertile soil and care for it, it's going to grow. And so it takes just some loving care for this new seed, this new thought, to just be with it, be conscious of it, and allow it to grow, and it will grow in strength and power. So that's kind of my summary of the book. And because a lot of us have been around Science of Mind for a while, probably everything I said was, you'd already heard before, you knew. So I was trying to find sort of a new edge to the topic, and I think at this point, what really causes me to light up, the experiences that I remember the most are the ones that really are beyond words. And so a friend of mine, I love it when friends know me so well that they send me emails that just like, oh yes, this, I get so excited. So a friend of mine sent me this message from, it's Father Richard Rohr, O-R-O-H-R. He's a Franciscan priest and mystic in New Mexico. He's the founder of the Center for Action and Contemplation. He teaches practices of contemplation and radical compassion, particularly for the socially marginalized. And this piece is from the Nature of the First Bible, and it's called Reality Trumps Words. And this just was sent to her on Friday the 23rd. So I was just felt so synchronistic that I got it in time for this talk. The over-idealization of books and reliance upon books, which means words, may keep us from mystical experience and the deeper knowing of reality as it is. People tend to confuse and substitute words for reality itself. The word clergy means the separated ones. And how did we become so separate? In part by reading books for 10 years. And going off to academic seminaries, which usually had little to do with the natural world beneath our feet and around us and above us. Then we also do our rituals inside buildings, which may be beautiful but are human constructs separating us from nature. We clergy may assume that we are ahead of the lay people because of our book education, but we're finding again and again that this isn't true. Often those taught by the hard knocks of reality seem to know more about what really matters. What Owen Barfield calls original participation, what Carl Jaspers calls pre-axial, and what Ken Wilber calls pre-rational, all describe an earlier, simpler consciousness that knows reality intuitively and immediately without so many mental filters. Simply by watching the sky, birds, trees, seasons, darkness, and light, people knew they belonged to something bigger. And even better, they lived in an enchanted universe where everything else belonged to. How many times do we feel we just don't belong? So-called primitive people often knew they belonged by listening, observing, and living inside of nature. They didn't have all the distractions that we have, of course. They paid close attention to the natural cycles of darkness and light, growth and death, winter and spring, which were everywhere all the time. These were their greatest teachers. Prior to the invention of the written word and the printing press, the way God made God's self available was through all of the creatures, seasons, cycles of life and death, the wondrous natural world. The wondrous natural world itself is the universal religion that precedes all later religions. It seems we need nature to smack us upside the head, to move us out of head and into experiencing reality. That's like my ministry. That describes my ministry. I love to offer retreats where I take people into nature. And we do. We have these incredible encounters with birds and black snakes and owls and
possums.
And possums. And just, they delight us to no end. So nature takes me beyond words. It's like a primal response within me. Somehow I'm connecting to this natural world that it just brings up this huge wave of appreciation, because animals in nature, they are free to hide from me. They are, you know, they're very smart and intelligent, and a lot of them are wary of humans. And so they can find places to hide, and especially for someone like me who doesn't see very well. And so when I get to witness one of them, I'm just like, yes! I just get so excited, because I feel like they trust me. They're willing to be seen. There's also, I think I'm having some impact on their willingness, because I'm emanating this vibration of appreciation. Mm-hmm. That goes out. That is a frequency that goes out from me, and it is perceived by the natural world. In the book Animal Speak, Ted Andrew talks about that the Native Americans believed that birds were especially receptive to our thoughts. And I'll never forget on retreat us doing a meditation about connecting with nature, and we were focusing on birds and, you know, how birds soar and different things. And we walked out on the deck, and as soon as we walked out, there went a blue heron. I mean, it was just, were we there at the right place at the right time? I think that bird flew because of what we had already intended, that we wanted that experience. We wanted an encounter. And so I resonate with the wonder of just the common things that we see in nature. I resonate with being in the woods and seeing trees. You know, that's such a common thing. And I think because I already resonate with the commonness of nature, when something additional happens, something unexpected, that I just soar in it. I just soar in it. And so what I want to, the experience that I had recently, this happened about a month ago. I was in a place of indecision. There was a change that took place at one of the places where I had been teaching yoga, and I had an opportunity, and do I take it or not? And there just wasn't. It just didn't feel, something just didn't feel exactly right. And, you know, I was second-guessing myself, and I'm like, oh, you're way overthinking this, and it's not that big of a deal, and going back and forth and back and forth. You know, and so I was in this place of discomfort. And so on a rainy evening, I just said, I just need to get out and get out in nature. So there's this little park. It was just misty. It wasn't like pouring down or anything. But it was dusk, even earlier than normal, because it was cloudy. And the clouds were low in the sky. So just imagine, you know, it's almost dark out. The clouds are hanging low, and then the street lights are illuminating the clouds. You know, so the clouds look light. And I'm in the park. It's got this little footpath. It's in a circle. And so I just do the, I kind of do the laps for my walks these days, just because part of the circle is in the woods. And I'll often stop at the place on the path where it's harder to see buildings around. You know, then I kind of imagine I'm really in the woods. And I often do a blessing while I'm walking. But that night, I just stopped. And I was looking at the dark image of the trees and the, all the bare branches against that illumined cloud background. It was really stunning, really pretty. And so I'm standing there doing a blessing, you know, blessing everything, the sky and the ground and everything in between, and naming it all. And I'm just standing there looking up, and here comes a huge, I'm assuming it was an owl, a big bird. And it landed in a tree. Now, once it landed, I couldn't see it, but I knew it was there. And I was just in awe, because I consider the owl one of my totems. And so, and at that time of night, I just thought that's probably what it was. It was a big bird. So I'm blessing it, you know, I'm just kind of whispering to it, thank you for coming. Oh, you know, what a wonderful gift to be in your presence. And but Jim was at home waiting for me. We were going to have dinner when I got back, so I felt like I needed to go. And so I said, all right, I'm going to give you five more breaths of heart energy. And so I stood there, you know, breathing and just sending it out to this owl, this bird. And on the third breath, and I said, I would love to see you again. And on the third breath, it flew away from me. So I got to see it a second time. And I just soared. It seems like a simple thing, but to me, it's a mystical experience. And it was the sign I needed to stop second-guessing myself and to trust myself more. And I easily made the decision after that. So that kind of experience, I mean, I can't even really describe it in words. I was in awe. I was just so grateful. But it's when you're in those moments, you don't need words. It's all feeling. It's all kind of primal sort of instinctual. It feels like a blessing. It just takes me to such a deep place of appreciation. And again, it was the sign that I needed. You know, I was asking for a sign, and I got it. So that really makes a difference. And when you have experiences like that, it carries you, it carries me forward with even deeper trust, with even greater sense of connection to the world, and knowing that spirit is in the world and that it's all connected. And that we can get so much from the natural world. So, since then, that this is a park I walk in fairly regularly, I've heard the owl hoot a few times at me. And there again, you know, somebody's saying, well, how do you know it's hooting at you? Well, I'm choosing to believe that. And so that's where we come back to, I choose. What do you choose to believe? I'm choosing to believe that owl recognizes who I am and that we have something going on here. And that makes life magical, and that makes life fun and meaningful, and I'm connected to life in a whole different realm. A whole different realm. I feel really like one with all of life. So, I wanted to end this talk with I saw another email recently that they posted the piece that Cahill Gibran had written on prayer. And it's like this what he wrote just ties everything together that I've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So it was like the perfect way to end. For For what is prayer but the expansion of you into the living ether? And if it is for your comfort to pour your darkness into space, it is also for your delight to pour forth the dawning of your heart. And if you cannot but weep when your soul summons you to prayer, she should spur you again and yet again, though weeping, until you shall come laughing. Your prayer in your distress and in your need, would that you might pray also in the fullness of your joy and in your days of abundance. When you pray, you rise to meet in the air those who are praying at that very hour, and whom save in prayer you might not meet. Therefore, let your visit to that invisible temple be for naught but ecstasy and sweet communion. For if you should enter the temple for no other purpose than asking, you shall not receive. And if you should enter into it to humble yourself, you shall not be lifted. Or even if you should enter into it to beg for the good of others, you shall not be heard. It is enough to enter the temple invisible. It is enough to enter the temple invisible. I cannot teach you how to pray in words. God listens not to your words, save when he himself uttered them through your lips. And I cannot teach you the prayer of the seas and the forest and the mountains. But you who are born of the mountains and the forest and the seas can find their prayers in your heart. And if you but listen in the stillness of the night, you shall hear them saying in silence, "Our God, who art our winged self, it is thy desire in us that desires. It is thy urge in us that would turn our nights, which are thine, into days, which are thine also. We cannot ask thee, for thou knowest our needs before they are born in us. Thou art our need, and in giving us more of thyself, thou givest us all." Then coming back to the words of Rumi, that last stanza. The lamps are different, but the light is the same. One matter, one energy, one light. One light mind. Endlessly emanating all things. One turning and burning diamond. One, one, one. Ground yourself. Strip yourself down to blind, loving silence. Stay there until you see you are gazing at the light with its own ageless eyes. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you. Yay.